Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
We would like to acknowledge that this podcast meeting is being held on Aboriginal land, the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. And we would like to pay respect to their elders past, present and emerging. And their multiple birth parents with children with disabilities.
And this week we're speaking to Kelly. She's a friend of mine, she's a P, and she's a director of the Smith-Magenis Syndrome Australia.
This podcast contains truth, laughter, and the occasional F word, so it's not really suitable for children.
Sometimes you just have to get your shits out. Shit, 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 shit. That's right, this is a language warning. Oh, shit.
Hello, Mandy.
Hello, Kate.
Coming to you from freezing Melbourne.
Yes, icy cold. Goodness gracious me.
And goodness, the best thing about Melbourne is the day this episode comes out, it could be 34. We had a day last week where it was like 27 and the next day was 14.
I know.
I was like, how do we do this? I don't know. Oh, but we do goodness. And we love it.
And it's just like uniforms switching between. All of a sudden we got a thermal on under this PE uniform. And then my Miss 12 was like, can I just wear PE uniform today and I'll just risk getting a detention? I was like, sure.
Sure, it's freezing. It's tracksuit weather.
Yes. Anyway, we have a fabulous guest on today. Would you like to say hello and introduce yourself?
Hello, I'm Kelly, and I'm a P, as Mandy mentioned, to an 18-year-old pea shoot mm-hmm. whose name is Emily. Mm-hmm. And although my background at uni was studying music and I spent most of my business career in IT, I actually am now fully into the world of not-for-profit disability space. So I guess being a bit of a split pea now, in that space, and work across a couple of different organizations that have to do with people with intellectual disability and other challenges.
She's a powerhouse pea.
Yeah, you can tell.
Yeah.
Yep.
She's awesome.
She's got powerhouse written all over it.
Yeah. She's the greatest. So thankful
you
to have
me. You can see me in my hoodie.
I can. I mean, we are in equal sort of clothes.
Yeah, look, it's a new wind cheater, but it's still a wind cheater.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, let's ask our questions and then we're going to hear everything.
Okay. Our first question, do you have a favourite song or band or music that either lifts you up when you're feeling low or really pumps you up when you're feeling good?
Look, this is going to sound really funny, but my go-to is often things like 90s grunge and folk, which you might think is actually a bit of a downer, but maybe it's about kind of acknowledgement and getting in the mode. And I like themes around, you know, social justice and really life reality check. But if I were to think of some songs, I guess, in that space, funny, and this isn't 90s grunge or folk, a song I haven't been able to get out of my head lately is Don't Stop Me Now by Queen.
Yes.
I actually will be singing it as I'm walking around. Yeah, so I think, you know, and it's kind of the letting go, living in the moment, or, you know, even a good old Tom Petty, Free Falling.
Free Falling.
That is such a good song.
Yes, a beautiful song.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, kind of that eclectic mix, or, you know, a Tracy Chapman fast car,
which is,
I guess, the escapism.
Yes.
piece of it. So, yeah, you know, so I step kind of outside. Those are a few of the songs that I think are my go-to favorites. Or when they come on, it's like, okay, everything has to shut down. It gets cranked up.
And yes, I love it. And are you allowed to? Will Emily let you listen to music and stuff? Or my girls turn the radio off on me
actually,
sometimes.
Actually, and she'll usually join me in singing. So she knows most of the songs, sometimes knows the lyrics better than me. I'm pretty good at making up fake lyrics.
As long as it sounds similar.
Totally.
Yeah. Get the chorus properly, but the verse is sometimes a bit hit or miss. Yeah.
Oh, awesome. What about, did you win any awards at school?
Look, I was a bit of a shocker. I was really good at coming in second, and I think about this when I've heard you discuss this in various episodes. So if I were to actually think about winning an award, and I was a complete nerd, so I'm just going to – that's the disclaimer.
Yeah.
In grade five, I won the spelling bee for primary. So, you know, there was
that's a big deal.
Exciting.
Yeah, in grade five, you up the grade sixes.
That's right. You know, one up the grade sixes. And then in grade six, I won the school science fair. So,
what did you make?
I followed the migratory patterns of the calliope hummingbird.
Wasn't a volcano then.
Which is, so not interesting at all. But yeah.
And where did you go to school? Where did you grow up? Tell us, people trying to pick.
I grew up, you can probably pick the accent.
Yeah.
I grew up in Canada, in the western part. So grew up in Calgary, close to the Rocky Mountains. So love hiking and mountain biking and skiing and everything kind of outdoorsy, because that's how I grew up. But I went to school at a small little private, rather evangelical Christian school. I went there from year 1 through 12.
Wow.
So, and we commuted. I lived on an acreage, so we commuted about an hour each way every day.
Were you picked up by a school bus, or did your mum have to drive you?
No, my parents were taxi drivers for both my brother and I, pretty full time, because not only did we have school, but we had extracurricular activities, and they were all in the city in the big smoke, and we were out in the farm, so definitely appreciate that more and more at the older I get.
That was quite an effort, wasn't it?
Huge effort.
What an effort it was.
And our last question and our favorite, why are you a P?
Yeah, so I'm mum to Emily, and Emily was diagnosed when she was 3 with Smith-Magenis syndrome. That's how I got kind of brought into her world and into the community that is Smith-Magenis, and which pulled me into a whole bunch of other beautiful communities along the way. It's hard to believe I've been on this journey for 18 years, and I know it will keep going and transitioning. That's what makes me a P.
Yeah. So she was 3 when you got that diagnosis. Did it take 3 years of genetic testing, or what was that like?
Look, I think always deep down, right from get-go, knew something more was going on. And we spent a number of years, you know, with GP and then pediatricians and then pediatricians and specialists. And look, I think there was acknowledgement, you know, after we were missing all the milestones, that lovely word. Mm-hmm. And experiencing growing challenges with, you know, even behavioral challenges, but some other issues, sleep issues and so forth, that something else was happening. But at the time, we just didn't see probably the right specialist. And it wasn't until we moved when Emily was 2. So, you know, what you do when you're really tired and bewildered and shattered is you move halfway across the world.
Definitely.
Or you have no friends or family.
Highly recommend.
So she was born in Canada. I didn't know that.
She was, you wouldn't know it because she sounds like a little Aussie. But no, she was born in Canada, so we moved over when she was 2.
You were bored?
Work. I got recruited over, and we thought, hey, why not?
Have an adventure.
Let's just see where this goes. So,
You're still here.
I'm still here. Australia can get rid of us. We did have a bit of fun trying to get permanent residency, yeah, I bet. I'll say, with her diagnosis coming in after we arrived here.
Right.
But I had a lot of support as well through my employer to help get that across the line. So, yeah, we're well and truly we're citizens of both countries.
Cool.
And feel very much at home.
What two fabulous countries to be citizens of.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Great.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when you were doing diagnosis and testing and all that, was that in Canada and Australia or what?
Not a lot happened in Canada because at that point it was kind of considered a developmental delay.
Oh, yeah.
It might just be a bit of a blip. Look, she failed to thrive as an infant. Mm-hmm. We ended up back in hospital, lots of swallowing issues, mm-hmm. a lot of motor issues in the mouth. And so some of those things now in hindsight should have been some major red flags. Mm-hmm. But she did kind of, you know, get past that. Mm-hmm. And even though she was delayed, it wasn't so significant that, you know, I guess it just wasn't as big of a concern as they would have thought, you know, mm-hmm. instead of, you know, she took her first steps at 18 months, so it wasn't so far behind.
Yes.
No, she had no speech though at all, right. Really no sounds. So that was, and, you know, they checked the hearing and they checked all those things. When she was two-ish or just before two, that's when we started seeing a lot of head banging and quite aggressive behavior, which we couldn't explain, you know, meltdowns that just seemed to be out of the blue. So we did start seeing people, but then when we moved to Australia, we very quickly got referred to a pediatrician who is really proactive, and so she started just kind of throwing us at other specialists.
And were you covered by any Medicare, or were you just paying for all that?
So Canada is very good. So back then, you know, definitely the whole health system is public.
Yes.
And for the odd allied health piece that we might have needed, we might have had private health to cover some of that. So it wasn't so much a cost concern, you know, here in Australia, two-tier system, but still, you know, Medicare covering a portion of that. And then again, I had good private health working for an American company in Australia. So we had pretty decent private health to cover the allied piece of it. But it was actually when the pediatrician had witnessed one of Emily's episodes and said, oh, I really just think we should have a neurologist look at her. And this had never happened before. So we went and saw the neurologist, I think a few weeks later. So she was three, just three. And he took 5 minutes and he said, I think there's something genetic underlying this.
Wow.
And he said, I don't want to alarm you, but he said, I'm seeing enough things that I think we should order some genetic testing. He actually suspected it may be Fragile X.
Right.
So on the testing form, when he was kind of saying what they should be looking for, that was one of the suggestions, and ordered the FISH testing for her. So,
and how did you feel when they said that? Were you relieved or were you scared?
I think when they suggested genetic testing, it hadn't even dawned on me that could be a thing. And it's so funny now, having lived this, it's kind of like, well, why wouldn't I have thought to ask about that there might be something? But you know, I knew about the major genetic, you know, chromosomal abnormalities, but not, you know, all these little ones. I had never heard of Fragile X at that point either. But, you know, I'll say once we got the answer, and I'll remember that day, like a movie that just plays back in your head. And you probably look at it differently every time I play that movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it was a shock.
Mm.
And of course, when the doctor calls you and said, can you come in and have a chat? You always know, okay, there's something, right? But even then I went, oh, we might find out. This could be good. And I think there was a tremendous sense of relief because finally we had an answer.
Yeah.
And it was validating.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, we had been saying for years to doctors and families and friends, you know, that we think, you know, there's something up, and we're probably starting to feel a little bit crazy. And having a diagnosis that really described her on paper.
Yes.
yeah, felt validating. And it didn't change who she was.
No, of course not.
The benefit of having lived 3 years with her up to that point is we had a pretty solid picture of who she was. Mm. And now we could just explain some of the things that we were, you know, just didn't know how to, and we knew, oh, it's not, you know, she's not just being, we had been told by one pediatrician, oh, she just might be a bit of an extreme toddler.
And we're like, oh,
extreme toddler.
Wow. That's not a category. Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, now the poor thing has been putting up, been trying to deal with some pretty extreme challenges.
Yes.
And, you know, this disorder is a complex multi-system disorder that, you know, has kind of hammered her body and her mind and neurologically. So I think, yeah, from that perspective, it was really good because now we knew that what it was, no one knew. No one knew actually how to describe it to us or tell us about because no one knew anything about it.
Right.
But at least we had a label, I guess, and we had a starting point of kind of opening up the door.
So were you able to – what were some of those characteristics that you were like, ah, this is her?
Yeah, so number one, sleep issue. Mm. So one of the things we noticed very early on is it seemed like she just wanted to be up all night and then she'd fall asleep in the strangest places. Like, remember being at a playground in Elsternwick and it was just a slide with one of those kind of tube covered slides. And she went up to the top and then she went to slide down and then she never kind of came up the end. And it's like, so walked around and went, oh, where did she go? Like, did I miss her just flying out? walked to the end and she was curled up in a little ball fast asleep at the bottom of the slide. So she had so instantly fallen asleep. And we have so many photos. Well, there's actually a, so Smith-McGinnis syndrome, we call it SMS.
Yeah.
There's an SMS book that a mom in the United States has done up of just all the kids and adults falling asleep in precarious places at all times.
Wow.
So that was one of the big ones because we learned very quickly that part of the genetic imprint is an inverted circadian rhythm, so an inverted sleep cycle. So she produces her melatonin opposite to someone typical. She gets fueled full of melatonin during the day, and then it just drops off at night. So that was probably one of the big ones. Obviously,
can you change that or not? No.
You can't. No.
No.
But there's strategies. You know, there's a good chunk of people who respond well to slow-release melatonin.
Yeah.
So we've been using that since we've had the diagnosis. Mm. And Emily, we're lucky, and she's lucky that it does have a strong impact. For a lot, beta blockers also help, and they help flatten the curve during the day as well, so help remove some of the exhaustion.
Hmm.
And look, there's new meds coming out. There's one that's in the US and UK that hasn't been approved yet in Australia that's addressing it a bit of a different way, but is, technology is getting there where the sleep thing is more manageable.
Yeah.
And Mandy, you would know, there's a lot of things around sleep hygiene and whatnot that I'm a sleep hygiene, you know, freak because I'm also a terrible sleeper and I don't have an excuse like Emily does. we've been very, very rigid around those things, but it's actually worked quite well. So she's a decent sleeper now, which is good.
Yeah.
And then I think the regulation challenges, behavioral challenges and intellectual disability were probably the two other big strong ones, not so much differentiating with the syndrome.
Yeah.
But those things definitely, were very well explained in the information that we received. The challenge with SMS is it's like, what is there? 250,000 chromosomal abnormalities out there. You know, a lot of rare disorders caused by a tiny, tiny piece of our DNA, and often it's just a microdeletion or a mutation or, you know, an addition. So it's a spelling error, basically. Mm. But it has such a massive impact on the entire human and the family and everyone around you. So, you know, a lot of the conditions with SMS also overlap with autism. Right. There's various studies and they use different methods. So there's not a fixed number, but they estimate between 50 and 90% of people with SMS fall quite strongly on the autism spectrum.
Right.
It's very common for them to be diagnosed with autism and not with SMS.
Right. Right.
Has run.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of other conditions like ADHD, OCD, there's very repetitive behaviors, oppositional defiance disorder, and sensory challenges and anxiety and those kinds of things that do overlap a lot of other.
Sure.
How did you find people? How did you start that? Was there Facebook groups? Was there, this is what, 2008?
2008, yes.
I know that because I know she's the same age as my girl. So
Ab plus three,
yeah.
I was going to go back to her birthday. So when we got the diagnosis, obviously we hadn't heard it, neither had our pediatrician. And so she knew us well enough to come armed with what information she could find.
Yep.
And she said, look, please promise me that when you go home, you're not just going to Google and Google and Google and do your own research. And I said, well, that's actually so not something that we can say we will follow.
No, of course we're going to do that.
The first thing we're going to do, and it's nearly killing me in this moment not to be Googling and trying to find out.
Yes.
But she'd done some background work to find out that an organization in the United States who's the main body internationally, PRISMS, they had quite a robust website with quite a bit of information. So she had pulled down some articles, printed them out, and said, look, you know, instead of Googling, if you can kind of go here and here's some of the information that I think is really balanced, that should give you, you know, more of a kind of, I guess, a perspective that isn't just going to, because it's hard to take on everything
to decipher
all at once.
Yeah, of course.
And at the time, I believe there were only around 20 documented cases around Australia. So we were dealing with something quite rare. And like even today, we're only sitting at around 130. So it's still quite underdiagnosed. There should be about 10 times as many.
Right, really?
There probably are
10
times as many in the population, just not diagnosed.
Right.
But when we got that information, I found a group that was based out of the UK. It's before Facebook groups started. I forget what the
forums
engine was, but it was a forum.
Yeah.
And I got connected to a couple of mums in the UK who were absolutely amazing. And one of them said to me, well, hey, you guys have a pretty special camp down in Australia. And Anne Smith, who is the co-discoverer, so Ellen McGinnis and Anne Smith had both discovered Smith-McGinnis syndrome and named. But Anne comes to this camp and it's on the central coast of New South Wales, and I think it's coming up quite soon.
Right.
So she gave me some contacts, and sure enough, we found within a month of Emily being diagnosed, this camp was running up the central coast of New South Wales.
Wow.
So very quickly and interestingly, I didn't go to that first camp. I actually had a trip already booked away, but Matthew Emily's father went, and I think that was probably a good thing. I probably wasn't ready for that camp yet, but he managed to make a lot of connections, particularly with the mums at the camp, and then brought them back to me and created those connections. So even though it was a very small group that attended the camp, it opened up this whole community and this whole world of people who got it and understood to a very deep level. And just were so warm and so welcoming. And, you know, that has continued ever since. So, you know, that's still become still a big part of my family here in Australia is that family we discovered at that camp.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
And have you been on camp since?
Yeah. So I don't think we've missed one.
Tell us a little bit about entering schooling and how did you make decisions around that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So that was quite interesting. So we again had a great pediatrician. There was a speechy that worked out of the same rooms. Becky was phenomenal and went above and beyond, really took us under her wing as a family. And so, you know, she was like, oh, you need to get Emily into early intervention. And what's early intervention? I had no clue what early intervention was. And so she made some calls, and then she's like, okay, you know, I think, and by then Emily had been removed from a couple of creches because her behavior was considered unmanageable. And so it kind of fell at a time where it's like, okay, well, now we can find at least a part-time program, which is really geared towards this. And
were you working? You know,
yeah, full-time.
Yeah.
Yeah, both of us, both her father and I were. So, yeah, trying to juggle that. And, yes, you know, what do you do for care? We were also lucky at that time to find, so my partner Brendan now, he called around after Emily got removed from the second kindy and found a place near us that the head of that department had gone, oh, we need more girls. And we've actually got a couple of other kids that, you know, have, you know, are not neurotypical. And you know, we really embrace that. And they were phenomenal. So we got in part-time there and part-time at early intervention. Wow. So it kind of fell into place.
Yep.
And then it was through, and that was at a special development school that had the early intervention. And it was through them that when it started to come time to look, they said, look, you know, we're never going to tell you what to do or, you know, where you should head. And, you know, if you feel mainstream's the right thing, you know, we're happy to help you figure, you know, look at certain schools that might have good programs or if you want to look at specialist schooling. So they kind of took us through it. But there was a bit of an underlying read between the lines. You know, we really think, you know, specialized schooling might be the path. And we had seen how much Emily flourished having smaller smaller classroom sizes, having more one-on-one and having teaching staff that really understood, you know, and having allied health kind of peppered in and stuff. So I just started going around and calling, and also our speech pathologist also did some research as she was always supporting us. And one of the schools that I visited was Ashwood School. And, you know, it was a bit outside our area, but still within reason. And it just, I think within 10 minutes, it just felt like home. You know, it was welcoming. The principal took me across the entire school for a tour. I could see how all the students, you know, worked with each other, interacted. And it was like, oh, it just felt like such a, I don't know, calm, inclusive, supportive, you know, everyone, you know, was kind of with their friends. And I could see, you know, I had a bit of hope after that this could be something really good for Emily. So we were pleased when she got a spot and that's from prep all the way through 12, spent there. So, Ashwood was always really good. They had something called the rapport, the school values. So those are respect, integrity, I have to make sure I get this right, passion, optimism, and responsibility. And I think if I think about the time that she's had there, I'm sure we had some pretty challenging times, but they worked with us really closely. And if I look at what Emily's taken away from that is how much more considerate she is, you know, of people around her and learning that respect and learning that code. And, you know, learning to be happy to give things a go, even if they're challenging, you know, and building that resilience and being honest and trustworthy and open and, you know, taking responsibility for, you know, what your actions are or for tasks that you're given and so forth. So all those values have just been intrinsic. And, you know, we owe them a lot for really reinforcing that in her world.
And does she like school?
She does. She is always chomping at the bit to get back to school whenever we have a break. She loves seeing her friends. Emily's quite social.
She's very social.
She will talk your ear off given the opportunity. I think it's a big thing for her from a social perspective. And, you know, there's a number of these students she's been with for years. So they've become really, really close friends. And they will continue to, you know, go into schooling and programs, you know, post-secondary, where some of these relationships get to continue.
She had the best 18th.
Did she?
She did have the
That was a ripper of a party.
Mum was exhausted, but it was.
I bet you were. It was bowling and karaoke, and then we were swapping. And then it was just full of friendship.
I could do that this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Someone wants to ask me. That sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, there was
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So how do you two know each other?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we met – I mean, I think I have met Emily through School Sports Victoria, you know, maybe, or seen Ashwood against our schools. But then I really spent time with Kelly once we joined Special Olympics.
Right. So you're involved with Special Olympics?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I chair the Melbourne Inner East Club. But started back, I think Emily would have been around 13 or so. And again, this comes back to the school. There's a really strong push at Ashwood for, you know, fitness and physical activity and sport, because it does much more than just the, you know, the physical well-being side, but it's the other pieces as well. But they've always encouraged us to look at extracurricular, and, you know, kind of ongoing things outside of school. Mm. And Special Olympics was one of those things. And when they first mentioned it to me, I don't think it resonated very well. I just thought, oh, you know, Emily isn't, you know, an expert in any specific sport. And I had in my head what a lot of people do with Special Olympics, where they think it's, you know, for people who are very highly skilled, and don't understand that it actually, yes, we do have some very highly skilled people in Special Olympics, but it's for all abilities, and everyone can compete with, you know, train and compete at their ability and with people of similar ability. So we were encouraged by a parent at the school, give it a go. And her son went to basketball, so I thought, okay, this will be interesting, because I don't think Emily had ever even held a basketball up to that point. But we went to basketball, and she had so much fun. You know, they made sure that she got the ball on a regular basis. You know, made sure that, you know, if they did a bit of a game, they'd pause, she'd have the ball, she'd get a chance to shoot it. And you know, the fears that I had initially went away, and you know, everyone was friendly sitting on the sidelines, the parents and the carers. And then the suggestion was, give tween bowling a go. So we did bowling, which she liked even more than basketball, which I can't blame her. But then it just kind of cascaded. So Emily's always been a relatively good runner. She's, you know, she's naturally able to run. And she's always on the go. So it's something that's probably a bit atypical of her syndrome, is she is a very physically busy. And so running has been a great thing, because it gets some of the energy out as well. But joining athletics was kind of a real turning point for her, because it was something that she was reasonably good at, and where she could make, you know, some significant achievements in that space, and be with like-minded athletes that kind of are in the same space. So we did that, and she got into the snow sports stuff as well, in the skiing. So, you know, that's kind of how we got into the Special Olympics. And I think, Mandy and I would chat quite regularly at athletics practice. And
then when you went to Tassie last year for the national games, Kelly was in charge of Molly. So she was in her gang of four amazing girls. And I would just go down there and just say you're doing a good job.
Oh, that was, that's such a memorable, like, I can't say enough about that whole national games experience and being with the girls. And Molly was probably the, you know, we actually had, I was so lucky. Well, all the athletes are beautiful, but, you know, I feel my four.
They were pretty
just,
gorgeous.
They were pretty gorgeous and just the characters in that group. You know, Molly's quite a comedian. So.
Which is strange because her mum, yeah. Boring.
Yeah, yeah. So she would keep spirits light and, yeah. You know, and keep people honest. And
yep. And on time. She's an organised lady. Yeah. And yeah, Kelly would do up her shoelaces. Then when we got home, she's like, you don't do them up like Kelly. Like,
oh, yeah, no. I hate it when there's a parent that does something better than you.
I know. Like, oh, I was like, this is outrageous.
Ruined everything.
It was just so lovely for me the first time releasing her into that world, knowing I had Kelly on my team, though. Yes. I was very anxious about it going. So it was wonderful. But you are an awesome part of MIE, chairing the whole, you know, it's a big club. It's Melbourne's, it's Australia's oldest club, isn't it?
Yeah, oldest and largest at this point. So, yeah, we've got a lot going on. You know, we've got... we're running programs in 9 different sports, and then there's other sports we run with affiliates, so with external organizations, mm-hmm. like things like equestrian and golf and so forth. We use affiliate relationships, mm-hmm. but then internally we're running programs for, you know, bocce, basketball, athletics, swimming. The list goes on. So, yeah. In bowling alone, we have almost 100 bowlers.
Yeah, wow. Oh, that is a time to go and see.
Yeah, that it is. It is. It's something you've never seen before.
Brilliant.
It's amazing. Yeah. And it's wonderful. Each lane is almost like its own sub club.
Yes.
They kind of get used to playing with each other. So there's just such good camaraderie, you know, kind of across each of the lanes. So,
well, you're doing and have done an incredible job. And so thank you just for myself on all the hard work. Mm. I've seen it on a like subcommittee level. You're organized. You've got great IT skills.
Oh. Better than us.
Oh, no IT skills. She's like, Mandy, can you please join this email thing? I'm like, no.
Oh, it's the handy thing about being a nerd back in school is I was able to continue that into my
adulthood. I'm too busy talking. It really hasn't done me much good for my computer skills.
No, none, zero. It's lucky when I join things. Yeah. Tell us about, though, being a director of the Smith-Magenis syndrome. I'm going to keep saying that wrong.
Yeah, So Smith-Magenis Syndrome Australia, or you can just say SMS.
Yeah, SMS, that's right. Yeah.
That's easier. So, look, there have been a couple groups in the past that were set up by various families and so forth, and you know, need to recognize the ones that started off the first camps. That would be 20 years ago. So, you know, but some of those groups, after, you know, parents would age or let's just be honest, we all get tired and need to shift, or life has you shift your focus, they might fold and then another group would start up.
Yes.
We got to a point in 2016, and this is kind of off the back of a camp that went, okay, now we've got a few tiny little orgs kind of doing different things, and maybe we just need to come together and, you know, join, you know, figure out what our mission is, what we want to do, and have an official SMS Australia organization, and get our partnership and affiliation with PRISMS, which is the international piece. So a few of us worked on that and basically founded SMS Australia as it is now in 2016. So we're all parents on the board, a small team of parents. We all have children who have a diagnosis of SMS or children or young adults.
Yep.
And our key activities are really around, I guess, first driving awareness. So we do campaigning with local groups. We try to be active on social media, especially at certain times of the year. So Smith-Magenis Syndrome Day is on the 17th of November.
Yes.
And the reason for that is SMS is 90% of the time, it's a deletion on the 17th chromosome on the short arm. So it's 17p11.2.
Perfect.
So 11 being the 11th month and 17 being the day. So that's that's
perfect. She's very thoughtful. That's amazing.
So that's SMS day. So we tend to do kind of awareness things around that. We have creating the network of family, I think, has probably been our number one priority, and making sure that any new families with new diagnosis, and sometimes they're not new families, as in they maybe get a very late diagnosis.
Yes.
For example, there's a version of SMS that's probably about 10% of cases, which is a mutation of the RAI1 gene. So a gene which is always deleted in the deletion version, but it's mutated, and it ends up having almost exactly the same symptoms. So it's considered SMS with some small changes, but they couldn't pick that up until they got into chromosomal microarray. So it's something that only recent technology is able to find, and therefore we're getting young adults not even so young adults that are now receiving a diagnosis when they didn't have one before. It's creating that network of families, and then we started a registry of medical professionals and allied health based on referral.
So important.
You know, that people know because there is no SMS expert in Australia.
So helpful.
But for example, our pediatrician, Emily, was her first. But now she, you know, I think up around 10 that she has followed or continues to. So, you know, they become the experts, whether they like it or not. They got dragged on the journey just like us as parents, and then embrace it and become really good advocates as well. We have the CAMP. So CAMP Breakaway is an organization unto itself up on the Central Coast of New South Wales. Mm-hmm. But back in 2003, they worked with a team of families and Ann Smith from the U.S., to hold the inaugural camp for SMS up there. And the way the camp works is, well, at least initially, it was really about seeking respite. So it was finding an opportunity for families to have respite for 4 days or 3.5 days. There was a clinic that was run. So Ann Smith was able to run her natural history study and capture information and visit each family and, you know, take the measurements and collect the data. So that would feed back into the NIH back in the United States. But then we could also have meetings with the families interacting together or Ann Smith telling us what the latest research and things would be. So, with our organization, we now make sure that camp can continue, especially when funding models have changed. It's harder for the camp to secure funds like it used to be able to through government and corporate grants and donations.
Yes.
So we facilitate getting Ann Smith and other specialists to come. So it becomes, you know, part of the conference layout, and also assisting families that may have financial challenges getting to the camp.
Yep.
The beauty of the NDIS is there is some support usually for families to attend the camp because it's supported accommodation, but also it's education for the parents and carers. So our next camp is next year, November. Yep. So it'll be coming back around. That's a big piece, and that's where we predominantly fundraise. To support that camp and that opportunity. And then besides that, it's really around distributing information and helping families navigate the NDIS. So we do quite a bit of work with families who may be either struggling to communicate what the needs of their child is you know, they're heading into the planning sessions and, you know, want to understand, you know, what other people have found can be supporting their child and helpful. And Ann Smith works quite closely with me. We do up letters of support for various scenarios.
It's amazing, Kelly.
So that's kind of what we do. And as time gets on and as people like Anne Smith Age, and yes. you know, she's retired now, but she continues as a volunteer.
Oh, what a legend.
You know, we're looking to find more, I guess, professionals to tap into, and hopefully over the next year or two, maybe find someone here locally that we can fund that can fill some of that gap from a professional standpoint.
Yeah. You're very busy volunteering. You volunteer with the Snow Sports Multiclass, Special Olympics, yes. and SMS.
And you work?
Yes. No, that's now my work.
Okay, yeah, would have to be. Yeah. I was like, how? Yeah.
I think it was a bit of a, Melbourne COVID 2021, where I just went, I feel I need to do something different. And I was actually already doing all three to some level, but I wasn't able to do them to the level that I wanted to. So I think, went home to my partner, Brendan, and said, I just kind of wish I could spend my time doing this instead of work. And look, there was nothing wrong with work.
Oh, no, of course.
But it just, I wasn't passionate about it. And it just wasn't as meaningful. So, and, I had a very internal facing role at the time. So I didn't really feel I was adding a lot of value. I couldn't see the value.
Yeah.
Where the beauty is, the Special Olympics.
Oh, value everywhere.
And, going down to athletics this past weekend and just spending time talking. You know, we had a couple of new athletes doing a come and try and talking to the parents. And, see, it was such horrible weather, but yet we had a pretty good turnout. And seeing the joy and the happiness and the friendships, you kind of go, okay, this is why we're doing it.
Yeah.
This is worth this.
And you're really good at it.
Yeah, right? She's really good at it.
Mandy and I are pretty much only good at talking. I don't want to talk you down, Mandy. You're also really good at other things. But you know what I mean?
Like, I can organise a talent show.
Yes, you can.
But
you can lead out in church worship that we don't do anymore. But what I mean is we wrote a book, right? But running whole committees and stuff, it's so great that you're so good at it so organised. Yes. The world needs people like
yes.
you.
Oh, but it's definitely, you definitely need a team. And I am highly organized.
Yeah.
And, I can get into, like you say, that kind of the technology bits and that's been a shift across all three organizations is trying to digitize and trying to remove human workload where it's not adding value to put that into systems.
Yes.
But then there's this whole other piece that, I'm not as good in front of a mic and I'm not, organizing social events. Sure, I can do it, but I'm probably, I coordinated Emily's Dev Ball last year, which was absolutely terrifying because I knew nothing about Dev Balls. And it was good to have people there who understood what a Dev Ball was.
Yes.
And so it's kind of the same thing. We've got so many different skill sets on the committee. We've got people with writing skills and, we've got people who just help out with everything. We've got some uber volunteers that every time you go, we need a hand, their hands fly up and they'll be anywhere. And
Mandy's actually one of those. She listens.
Yes, Yolande.
Yes, Yolande is amazing.
Key example of that. Yes. And so it definitely takes the team. And I think the challenge is making sure we all have some succession as well.
Yes,
and that we continue having young people come through and volunteer because we do have an aging volunteer base. This is across everything.
Any
organization that has volunteers.
Yes,
exactly.
Getting because we've got some really good young ones in our comms team, and it's wonderful, and it adds energy and enthusiasm that I think otherwise people like me may not add.
Totally. Because we are awesome, but we also are tired.
Yeah, and I can't work out how to do an app for this or that. And they'd I'll do that.
I know. They fly through it. They're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I just want to ask about the Berlin World Games because Emily qualified. She went to Berlin. Tell us a little bit about what that was like. We've heard from Harry and Chelsea and Anna, what a moment.
Yeah, look, it's hard. It's actually hard to put into words. It was a phenomenal experience. And I think the opening ceremony is when it really kind of hit me what they were.
Yeah.
And until that, and just to have a stadium filled, and a stadium where there's some pretty horrific things that happened in that stadium, and where, you know, the Nazi addresses used to be given. And, you know, and we think about the last time the, you know, there was international competition held in that stadium, you know, from an Olympic standpoint, to now where it's now the most inclusive event in the world.
How amazing.
Yeah, it just really gives you shivers. The amount of pride with every country and everyone cheering them on. For me, seeing Amelie's face, it was, I don't think I've seen her happier. Just the absolute glee and joy and pride to be there. It's an opportunity that it really is an opportunity of a lifetime, but something we are incredibly fortunate, and we are very thankful that she had the opportunity to do it. And look, it's a lot of hard work for the team that goes out there, and the support. You know, again, it's all volunteers. The coaches and team support are volunteers. They've got massively long days, and they've got sometimes, you know, a few four individuals under their care that they may never have met before. In a massive responsibility, and spending, you know, once the actual competition begins, spending every single day, you know, at the venues and supporting them. And so, you know, very, very thankful and very grateful for the time that each individual took to make these games possible, and this kind of experience possible for
us. Shout out to Sarah, who went with your family, who's one of Molly's favorite friends. She runs into athletics and says, "Sarah!" And I said, when we first brought you here, I had to bribe you with a packet of lollies to get out of the car, and now you're running in like these volunteers.
Absolutely agree. And look, Sarah's an excellent example and inspiration to other young people, that, you know, of the value that young people can provide volunteering in this kind of capacity, and the difference they make, and how they just touch the lives of everyone around them. And it's not just the athletes, it's us as parents as well. You know, there's some beautiful skills and beautiful people out there.
Definitely.
And Sarah's a really, really good example.
Another good thing Callie is good at is grants and putting people up for awards. And Sarah won.
Oh, yes.
$20,000.
I remember.
Volunteer.
She did.
For Westfield. She did.
We all voted.
Oh, no, I made everyone vote.
Mandy was like a troll. You will not pass. Deserved. Go vote.
Yes.
Yeah, very well-deserved recognition, I think, for all that she does, you know, running our athletics program, running our soccer program.
Yeah.
And, again, being someone that puts her hand up to do, you know, a whole multitude of things, and just, facilitates these relationships at the programs, you know. And if someone is on the sideline, or maybe it's their first time and they're feeling pretty nervous, Sarah's the first one to walk over there and just, you know, even just one-on-one, do some things, get them brought, you know, bringing them into the fold. So she just got that built into her DNA, that warmth and inclusiveness.
We've got to finish up soon, but tell me, what are the plans for Amelie leaving school? I know it's a big term, looking at the end of schooling.
Yeah, look, I'm someone who likes to do a lot of planning, likes a lot of structure in place. And it's funny, when it comes to Amelie, I've learned over time that I just can't overbake it, because things are just going to change. And I've gotten very, very good at living in the moment when it comes to her. I'm really bad at it in pretty much every other aspect of my life. But when it comes to Amelie, it's almost like I need her to take the lead and show me. So, and I took some advice from another one of our committee members, who, you know, kind of said, look, there's no point trying to get it all set up perfectly, because guaranteed you're going to have to change. And, you know, and if you put in, you know, a heap of work into making this possible, you know, chances are it's going to be very frustrating. It's going to be, I did all this work and now I'm having to change. So I've tried to put that perspective on, and we did some trial days with Amelie at various programs. She's not someone who loves to sit in the classroom, you know, and do kind of the more academic side of things. But she really loves to be hands-on and really loves to be in a social environment. So our plan next year, she'll be in a program with actually a lot of her, there's some of her Special Olympics friends as well as some of her Ashwood friends who graduated in the last year or two. And we're going to focus on sport and recreation and hospitality.
Awesome.
So those are kind of, and really playing to her strengths. And when we have a, we won't do that full time. We'll do that three and a half days a week. And then we will try to fill up the rest of her time with doing some of that extracurricular stuff that always gets pegged into the evenings. And
I'm doing the same. I'm just having some space because those words from that other committee member resonated to me as well through you to just hold things loosely and just have a couple of days to have, go and get your hair cut or go to the dentist or anything like that. I'm really looking forward to having some space or just lie on your bed.
Yeah.
Molly will do that. Emily, maybe not.
No, I've learned Emily really needs, and maybe it's age appropriate, she really needs that downtime and needs that time away. So as much as she's very chatty and go, 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 more and more
rest.
I find as soon as she comes home, it's kind of like up in the bedroom, doors shut, and she's going to do her thing. So I need to build in that downtime for her.
It's quite freeing rather than thinking we've got to jam-pack them.
And
it's
extremely age appropriate
because,
you know, people who are finishing school and going to university or TAFE, they have Monday mornings off or Thursday afternoons. Or,
So is there anything we've missed that you want to tell the world? I could talk to you for 17,000 hours.
At least.
No, look, I think, and this comes back to, I guess, you know, the value of the podcast, but, you know, of these conversations is it's really our social responsibility to educate ourselves and I guess coming on here, it's creating that awareness or providing some of that education so that, you know, the world can be more empathetic and understanding that lived experience comes in different forms.
Yes.
You know, I think, you know, there's, I have a friend who works in another disability organization and she's a mother to a son with SMS as well. And the organization she works in is probably predominantly physical disability and definitely more and more programs and kind of synergies with organizations for people with intellectual disability. But what she finds in her organization and what, you know, we found even on our journey is sometimes it's not seen that parents have the lived experience in our scenario because we often need to help be that voice and need to help translate what's going on and you know we and do the advocating for our for our children and so forth. So you know, lived experience, if we educate ourselves, if we have lived experience, then we have this whole ecosystem of, you know, parents, family members, friends, you know, Special Olympics. It's like our whole community is now a community of people with lived experience and with because they're either in subcapacity, they're either 1 degree separation or they're directly involved. So, you know, I think us all making ourselves part of this makes it a much more inclusive world. If we play our part, you know, people won't be as lonely. And we can make sure that we all get the gift and the benefits of these children. You know, I would say, I think, you know, we talk, it's easy to talk about the challenges and, you know, some of the stumbling blocks along the way, but there are so many gifts that our children deliver. And it's, you know, it's not just necessarily the, you know, how engaging or affectionate or, you know, all those areas, but it's also the impact that she's had on me you know, I'm involved in these organizations because of her. You know, and I feel that I am far more, you know, accepting and loving of others in general because of her. So, you know, I think, you know, I think that's probably the key thing, you know, in this journey has been the positives that have come away from that.
Thank you, Kelly. We know people will love listening to you.
Yes.
And this is probably something that can go on your website and people can listen to for, you know, SMS, people trying to searching for it, you never know. So thank you for giving your time.
Thank you.
And, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, and I just look forward to doing this life with you for a long, long time. I'm really grateful for you. And, let's just keep
you might
doing.
Be stuck. You might be stuck with me.
Yeah, great. I'm happy to be stuck with you. I really appreciate when I can ring you and just download some stuff and you get it.
Yeah.
You get every single thing I'm saying, and that's rare. Yes, so thank you.
It is rare.
Yeah.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.